This episode is brought to you by The Tropecast, also a part of the Webcast Beacon Network. On The Tropecast, we discuss tropes, memes, and other repetitive literary devices, including tangential discussions, of course, as we use TV tropes as a reference point for much of the content. Check out The Tropecast at thetropecast.com.
News and commentary on the Webcomic Beacon newscast.
Okay, well, welcome one and all, and three people in the chat room. Good morning. It's Sunday morning here at the Webcomic Beacon newscast. This is the newscast for October 9th, 2011. It is number 37 all in a row, unless you count the fact that we missed last week. Here on the show, I am Ross Scott, your host for the week as always. I host a little comic on the side called The System. It can be found at systemcomic.com. With me this week, as always, keeping things running behind the scene and can't keep his mouth shut, so I might as well just introduce him, is Fess.
I didn't talk last time, but you introduced me, so I did talk. But before that...
Well, I just figured we get that out of the way.
Okay. I think you meant to say, I'm Fess.
What'd you have for breakfast?
Actually, I had ice cream and Reese's Pieces.
The breakfast of champions. By breakfast, do you mean I haven't gotten to bed yet or something?
No, it was breakfast. It was breakfast. Oh, and chocolate milk.
I'm an adult, man.
Speaking of odd sleep schedules, also with us on the show.
Oh, hello there.
And tweeting people to follow the puppet version of myself at 4 a.m. is the amazing Alex Heberling.
Hello.
You can find Alex's stuff, and you should find it at alexsguide.net. How are you doing this week, Alex?
What a week. I'm doing well.
It happens.
Puppet Ross helped a lot.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm so happy. I did not create that. I am not the hand up Puppet Ross's butt.
I kind of believe you, but I'm not entirely sure.
I think I know who it is. Yeah, twitter.com/puppet. Thank God that exists.
Yes.
Thanks, Internet.
Yes.
Okay. What's funny is we both have the same profile picture, which is me as a puppet.
Yeah, I know. I noticed that.
Anyway, also with us on the show, our special guest for the week, creator of the wonderful and prolific, I dare say prolific, comic Multiplex, which can be found at multiplexcomic.com, is Gordon McAlpin. Good to have you on the show, Gordon.
Thanks for having me. Twice a week is prolific.
I meant more that it's been running a while.
Oh, okay. 6 years is prolific. That works.
Yeah, and you got a book.
I do have a book.
Yeah. You have more readers than I do. That makes you prolific.
You have super art.
That's true.
Counts for something.
And normally I would say I would agree with you, except last night we had at our show 70 people. We were like, last time we did that show, it was in Frederick, Maryland. We sold it out and we were like, yeah, welcome back, Frederick. 70 of you. Yeah. All right. Remember, it takes 12 people to do most art fights. So there were, you know, what's the number of people in front of the stage that were on the stage at some point. That's the wrong ratio for a show.
Well, you know, win some, lose some.
Maybe we can just get it down to where Marty and I just kind of do everything on stage and then up the ratio. But anyway, so here in the newscast every week, we pour through all the news stories that we can. Thanks to our own Eric, whose work, what's his new web address? I know I can't give out the old one anymore, but I don't know what the new one is. Eric posted in the chat room.
Bladebunny.com?
Yeah, he'll post it in a minute, and then I will totally pimp it out. Meanwhile, Eric does a lot of the groundwork by checking all of the news sites that we can to talk about what's gone on this week. But before we get to the stuff that Eric has found, I want to ask you guys if there was anything this week that you'd seen that you thought was particularly amazing or awesome in the world of webcomics. Let's start with you, Alex.
Oh, let's see. This week, I opened up my Google Reader to see what comics I like favorited this week.
Mm-hmm.
But now I favorite so many things I can't even tell.
Okay. Well, I'll start one just so we have something to talk about, Alex. God, why did I just forget his name? Dresden Kodak. Aaron Diaz, there it is, has been doing some really interesting Justice League and now the Evil League of Villains redesigns, and that he's been posting on his Tumblr account, and they've been really cool and really interesting. If you go over to, I believe it's DresdenKodak.tumblr.com, yep, you can see all of the most recent article on there right now is rebooting DC's villains. And then if you scroll down a bit and go through the previous the article right before that is why cleavage is bad for crime fighting. And the one before that is rebooting the Justice League. And they're all just costume and somewhat story reimaginings for the characters in terms of who they are and why they have the powers they have. And it's some really interesting takes. He does some gender manipulation in terms of, you know, why does everybody have to be a dude but Wonder Woman kind of stuff. Also tries to get it a little more multicultural and multiracial and gets rid of Power Girl's stupid cleavage circle.
The boob window.
The boob. Circle of boobs.
It brings
and it moves us all.
It's like the Force. No, that's not what I meant. Anyway, it's early. It's Sunday. It's all very chill. Yeah, but I thought they were really interesting. Either of you happen to stumble across it or read them at all? I mean, they got retweeted a lot lately.
Yeah, I saw them reblogged on Tumblr.
Yeah.
This week. They're cool.
What's also funny is so the people that like are kind of random names, and so he just kind of gets to put in the names that he wants. I definitely recognized he named one character Ananth and gave the other last name of Ota, which is totally just a reference to Yuko and Ananth from Johnny Wander, which is awesome. Like, thanks. That's awesome. No, but he's got some really interesting takes on, you know, where people got their powers and does some interesting stuff with he dared to mess with Superman. And his kind of story, and yeah, there's some good stuff in there. Not to mention they all look pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Gordon, did you find anything cool this week, or is there anything that you've been looking at?
What's a webcomic?
Question.
No. I
let's take 3 hours and discuss that.
I have not really been paying attention, to be honest.
So. Hold on, let me get Understanding Comics out.
No. You got to skip straight to Reinventing Comics, where we all accept, you know, micropayments in order to provide comics for people.
Okay, I do have a cool thing now.
What's that, Alex? Yes.
It's this new Tumblr that I found. I don't know if it's new, but it's new to me that I found this week. It's called EscherGirls.tumblr.com. It's a blog all just females from comics and various other forms of illustration with questionable anatomy. And it's awesome. You should check it out.
Keep posting.
EscherGirls.tumblr.com.
Those of you that are wondering about spelling about all the things or just want to find the links that we're talking about, we will be posting all of them on today's newscast post. It's often helpful to follow along as we're going through them, both live in the chat room or while you're listening way after this happened. Just go on over to newscast.webcomicbeacon.com and you can find all of these articles and they're cool and interesting. Sometimes. Oh, wow. These are some real physics-defying stuff.
That's
Nice. I'm not sure what defies physics more, the biology or some of the costumes.
Kind of a little of both.
Yeah, definitely.
Consider that followed, because I clearly needed more tumblers. All right. Well, with that, we'll start heading into our news stories. Now, if you have anything news story-wise that you would like us to talk about, send it on over to us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com, and we will talk about it here on the show, as long as it's somewhat, somehow webcomics-related. Mostly, I'll just be really excited that someone sent us an email. Now, our top stories of this week is, of course, unfortunately, the fact that Steve Jobs has moved on to the great Apple store in the sky. Now, there's been a lot of articles about it this week. It's been covered in depth in a lot of places, I'm sure. Unless you've been living under a Linux server, you've heard about it. But we're going to link, since this is the webcomic beacon, to Cleefield on Comics, which has a bunch of cartoonists remembering Steve Jobs. Now, I read through it. They don't have on there the XKCD one, which has a eternal memorial of a spinning pinwheel, which I thought was pretty great. But
yeah, I thought that was the best one.
But they did bring in a lot of editorial cartoonists, and I'm amazed how many made iCloud references.
I'm amazed at how many of them are just terrible.
Yes.
I actually tweeted about this because I thought it was kind of, well, half hackneyed and half sort of disrespectful.
Right.
But there are so many of these are Steve Jobs at the gates of heaven and completely ignoring the fact that he was a Buddhist.
I saw one where he's, you know, at the pearly gates, and St. Peter's like shuffling through his book, and Steve Jobs is holding out his phone. He's like, "Oh, you have an app for that? What does that even mean?"
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's kind of an editorial cartoonist trope. You know, it's like, let's do this. Let's put him here.
Yeah. I mean, there's no less than a dozen with Jobs in heaven or at the gates of heaven
Meanwhile, there were some actually pretty good ones, you know, some interesting ones. The one I saw wasn't actually a cartoon, but there was someone had taken the Apple logo, and instead of a bite coming out of it, it's actually Steve Jobs' silhouette put on black background. And what was interesting about that one, I will find that link, because now follow the guy on Tumblr, is that it was just a guy on Tumblr, a 19-year-old kid who just makes graphic design stuff in his spare time, and it got reblogged and then used in a bunch of news articles over 180,000 times. Damn. I mean, for Tumblr, that's a lot.
Did he make any money from it, though?
$0. And he didn't even watermark it, which is like, oh, I'm sure he's like, damn it.
Nah.
I'd watermark that crap. Wait, do we have the explicit tag on this, Fess?
I don't have the explicit tag on any of the shows.
Ah, shit. Sorry. Anyway.
It doesn't matter. I don't care.
They have a clean tag on it either.
Yeah, that doesn't have a clean tag either.
We go for PG-13. That works. Yeah. Well, I got to say, though, I mean, I'm recording all of this right. Wait, I'm sorry. I'm not recording all this. Fess, you're recording, right?
Yes.
Okay. Meanwhile, I do all my stuff now, and have, as long as I've been doing comics, the digital portion of it has always been on a Mac for me. I learned design on a Mac. I could use a PC, but I've been a Mac guy since college, and I'm not going back anytime soon. So I got to say, it is something that affected me. I've wanted to do the right guest, the right memorial kind of thing, but I didn't want to draw him at the pearly gates. I'm not laughing at someone's death. I'm laughing at pearly gates right now. I just want to be clear on that. Gordon, you strike me as a Mac user.
Absolutely. I've been a Mac user since probably college as well. I the only non-Macs that I've owned personally have been Power Computings, which were mid-90s Mac clones in the short-lived period that those existed. Yeah. They were the one, actually, clone company that Apple bought out when Steve Jobs came back. So, you know, at the time, they were doing better Macs than Apple was. But
right.
that was in the dark period when Steve Jobs wasn't there.
Yeah. And it was so funny because they'd like licensed this company to do it, and then they were like, "Oh, we need to get that back." So then they just bought the company.
Right, right. But I mean, they did actually make fantastic computers. They and anyway, but yeah, I've been a lifelong, I guess, Mac user. I not counting my childhood where, you know, Macs
right.
barely existed, but I mean, that was back in the days of BBSs.
Yeah.
Instead of the World Wide Web. So I dated myself.
I started
there.
On an Apple IIc. The first computer my family ever had was an Apple IIc. And it, you know, no two disk drives and mm-hmm. no hard drive. The idea of a hard drive didn't make sense to me for a long time. It's like, you don't need to put a disk to boot? What are you doing? You don't need to flip it over later? What's that?
My family's first computer was an AT&T computer back when they made PCs. It was an 8086. I believe it had possibly 64K of RAM, maybe 128. It might have been you know, a screaming machine.
Why would anyone need that much RAM?
Right. Anyway, but yeah, no. I have to admit that I did get a little depressed about Steve Jobs' death. It was the first celebrity since Jim Henson that I've actually given a shit about their death. Because, you know, for the most part, it's just like, whatever. Okay.
Yeah.
Most of them haven't really done much of anything, you know?
Yeah.
Jobs was, you know, indirectly responsible for some of the greatest leaps in technology. And granted, all technological leaps are incremental. And so there is always going to be somebody saying, well, you know, the iPhone was just a new phone, blah, blah, blah. You know,
I actually rewatched the initial announcement for the iPhone, which, you know, 2007, right? And they showed all the main phones on the market right then, and they all had the same look to them. And then suddenly they show the iPhone with its one button, and then you see it now in 2011, you know, 4 years later, and it's like, oh my God, they don't make phones that look like any of those old things much anymore.
Exactly.
Everything's now an iPhone clone or, you know, a dumb phone, so to
right.
speak. Yeah, Alex, are you a Mac person at all?
I've used PCs for most of my life. I did use Macs in college just because that's what they stock every art school.
You had an experimental phase in college. It happened.
And I also used the Mac at the library when I was a little kid, and I would play with KidPix, their drawing program.
Oh, I loved KidPix.
So KidPix was a big part of my poor childhood. So thanks, Steve. I still want that damn rainbow brush. I can't quite duplicate it in Photoshop, which is the craziest thing to say.
I bought the program that makes it look like you're pouring a beer out of and then I poured one out for Steve.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Warp whirl. Anyway, we'll move.
Is complaining now. About Max and the Skype chat.
Actually, I thought this was an interesting question. I can't remember where I saw it, but there was a little poll. I think it might have been the New York Times, actually. What product that Steve Jobs helped create will be the most influential? Or, you know, which one is his legacy? The Mac, the iPhone, the iPod, and iTunes, I guess, along with that, or the iPad?
Oh, man. Good question.
Or the Apple TV.
or that hi-fi stereo they tried to make. Like a hot.
Which was actually really good.
It was.
Funny if I had it. It sounded fantastic for what it was, you know, with the little one all-in-one portable speaker thing.
You know what? I worked at an Apple store for like 8 months. I got to see a lot of stuff happen in that 8 months. Gee, one thing. God, I think the one thing that Steve Jobs really did was brought really beautiful form factor to computing. I mean, to all his technology. Like, other computers, other gadgetry just doesn't have that smoothness and sleekness. And you can tell when something's like trying to be the Mac laptop in, you know, Sony's version of the sleek Mac laptop. I mean, I know it's not one product, right. But that idea of that form factor being so perfect. I mean, if you look at just the power brick that comes with any Mac laptop now, the fact that it's got these two little hooks that you can flip up to wrap the cord around it, so you have a place for that cord, and the fact that the brick doesn't hang off of the cord, but it actually is the end, so it doesn't weigh down the whole thing. I mean, and the fact that they've got a magnetic attachment on the end, so if someone trips over it, hopefully it doesn't take the whole computer with it. Those are all subtle little things, but they just make you feel like they thought everything through. And I know, yeah, Macs have errors. Yeah, someone's always going to, you know, every time I have a computer problem with my Mac and I tweet about it, like, does anyone have an answer? Three people always tweet back, should have bought a PC. It's like, oh, I know how to fix it on PC. It's like, well, I don't give a crap what you did on your PC. I have had so little trouble with my Macs ever since I got them. And the trouble that I have had is so small in comparison to all the troubles I had on a PC that there's just no turning back.
Sure.
Anyway, okay, so on to webcomics. that happens. Over at the webcomic Evil Diva, which I got to admit I wasn't that familiar with before our news hound Eric managed to dig this up. They have been dealing with an issue of sexual assault lately, and the comic has gotten kind of racy along with it. Now, the readers have exploded around it due to this recent thing, and this is right after they started bringing in all of this new paywall premium content part, the main comic still being accessible. You can find this at evildivacomics.com. The story is running right now. And there's been a lot of outrage about how it went from so lighthearted in general to suddenly this, also right after all this payment stuff has kicked in. And as a follow-up, readership has actually kind of shot up right around when this happened due to somewhat to the content.
I don't know. I don't really think that – I mean, I saw their Project Wonderful stats, and I don't – really
it's not hugely up. I mean,
yeah,
it's only been 2 days,
like, so. Right? It was higher 3 weeks ago, you know. But I don't think that necessarily that means that they've been losing readers and then they just kind of bounce back a little bit. These kind of waves really just happen.
It's true,
and I don't know. I also was not familiar with the strip. I did read the last chapter just to try to get some context for it.
Yeah,
the art is gorgeous.
Yeah,
but I have to say the writing is terrible. at least this current story arc. There was one comment in particular that pointed out that sexual assaults in this context, in this college setting that the writer is trying to do, just don't happen like that. It's almost always, almost invariably, somebody that actually knows the person in question.
Right.
The writer simply did not do enough research and isn't grounding it in enough meaning to give it a point. It's just so far anyway, just something shitty happening. And I have to make allowances for the fact that, we could be going somewhere with it. I don't see it yet.
It's still forming. I mean,
but there was also, you know, an earlier storyline where they've been apparently bouncing around different alternate universes and whatever. I don't quite understand it. And from the comments, a lot of the readers don't seem to understand it. But, there was another slightly darker bit where Devo was beating up one of her rivals. It was a little bit violent, I guess. I mean, she kicked her in the stomach, something like that. But and that seemed a little out of place with where the strip originally came from, because I'd read some at the beginning as well, and it was a very lighthearted strip. There are ways to deal with adding drama into a comic, but unfortunately, you need to have a point behind it when you do that. It's kind of part and parcel with telling the story. It's like, why is this happening? Is it just if it's a soap opera and things are just happening, that's not really all that interesting. There has to be some kind of underlying point about the characters, to make it, to justify the stuff that you're putting them through. Maybe not every single time. There's always going to be an exception, but I don't see enough in the story that I've read to make it work for me.
I misspoke. It's not a paywall. It's pay as you go.
Right.
So for enough money gets donated, they then release a new page, which is, something that has a lot more meaning to it as when you're in the middle of someone getting sexually assaulted, which
we've talked about. You might have been not on the show when we actually talked about when Evil Diva went to this sort of payment plan. And I said it was interesting, but and I'm going to see how it works out, because they're waiting for the money that they get from donations or selling merch or from income from Project Wonderful ads so that they can pay the artist instead of just
simply
having
to... Simply page.
Yeah, and that can make sense, though I did want to comment on the Project Wonderful stats, which are, for what they are, given if people have ads enabled or JavaScript enabled, they're an approximation. But what they're still good for are seeing trends. And basically, overall, traffic has been going down, I would say, mainly because you can't rely on when they're going to update. So people are probably, if they're still reading it, they're coming back very, very infrequently. And if you have ads, that's honestly not helping.
Wait a while, and it's like, oh, I'll check in with, see if anything's happening.
Yeah, and when you have something like this in a comic, of course it's going to spike, because people are going to be like, oh, did you see what they're doing? And, so people are going to be whatever. And we don't know how far this assault is going to be going yet.
Right.
And I'd rather not give so much promotion to this.
It's going to get stopped. Before anything seriously traumatic happens, that would be incredibly out of place.
Yeah.
You never know. I think the inclusion of the sexual assault in the first place, I really just don't know what they're trying to say with it. It's very clumsy, and I don't really want to bag on the guy, because, like I said, I haven't really read that, or the team, I guess, because I don't want to pretend like I've read the whole series, which I haven't.
That's a little bit much. A lot of times when webcomic artists try and go into something serious, there has been a lot of backlash. For example, Control-Alt-Delete doing an abortion storyline and a lot of readers...
A miscarriage
storyline. I knew there was a dead baby. I didn't know how it got there. Sorry.
Well, they call it the abortion storyline because he completely stopped doing that arc after that strip posted and never mentioned it again. So he clearly aborted whatever story he was planning that involved that. And, one would hope, actually, because if he really did just do a miscarriage and then never, ever mention it again, that's a little... screwed up.
Well, there's also when Mookie's comic, Dominic Deegan, thank you.
Yeah, the
when
Justified
had a whole rape related storyline, there was a lot of backlash then as well. So is it possible, is there a way to do this stuff, or have there been examples that are that have covered sort of big serious topics either suddenly or along the way?
I would like to conject that It's
or is it
people,
just that anytime you cover something like this, there's going to be...
Well,
you know,
there's that. Just anytime you do something like this, people are going to be all up in arms. But I would conject that people that are actually doing these storylines see it as a plot device.
Right.
And they don't... I would assume that they don't have firsthand experience, and they're not doing any... And they're not doing any research on this. It's like, oh, we'll just... It's like, you know, rape is the new parents that are dead. This sort of thing. You know, it's a plot device to them, and they're not doing it right.
I'm sorry, is Evil Diva going to turn into Batman in your version of the story?
I don't know. It's like, ooh, we gotta have something traumatic in here. Let's have her get raped because that's a plot. You know, they treat it as a plot device, and it's all wrong. It can be done right and well, but a lot of people will think that, oh, well, the character needs to change. They need to grow up. They need to face something really hard. She's a woman. Well, she's going to get raped. If it was a, you know, it just seems to be, it's just poorly done in most cases, I would say.
I can't honestly say that I've ever seen an ongoing narrative deal with it in a convincing fashion. Mm-hmm. I obviously rape stories have worked really well in movies where the rape is a focal point, either the driving force for the action that follows, or the culmination of some the preceding action. When you're taking a character that that the readers have come to know and love and sticking him in this relatively arbitrary situation, in the context of the story, the incongruity is a lot to deal with. It takes a lot. It either takes a very strong point, which I don't see in Evil Diva, or a lot of talent. Probably some combination of both, and good art isn't gonna carry you,
right?
One thing I want to that just popped into my head was that Davin was raped in Something Positive. It was not a violent rape. He was under the influence of pain medication, and the black woman, I don't remember her name, the black woman character, was turned on by him in his adult state and apparently had sex with him. And then there were shenanigans. So that's another treatment of the subject and that we can think about.
Yeah. Now Something Positive, is so insulting, or crass, I should say. Insulting at all. In general, that one moment did not even stand out to me.
Yeah, I mean,
there is kind of a context association too. Okay. Well, with that, we're happy to continue the discussion, as I know our chat room is loving just making lots of jokes about this. So we will continue the discussion gladly over on our website. Go on over and please get really annoyed in our comment section over at newscast.webcomicbeacon.com. We will continue with more stories in just a minute, but first we're going to take a quick break and we will be right back. See you in a minute.
The internet is not a big truck. The internet is not something that you just dump something on. The internet is not a big truck. The internet is a series of tubes. The internet is not a big truck. The internet is not something that you just dump something on. The internet is not a big truck. The internet. Streaming stuff on the internet. Why? Tubes. The internet is tubes. Connections, consumers, massive commercial purposes. Big truck, long distance. It's tubes. Tangled up tubes. Enormous series of tubes. Your own personal internet. The World Wide Web. The internet is tubes. Those tubes can be filled. And if they're filled, the internet is going to be laid a series of tubes. The internet is not a big truck. The internet is not something that you just dump something on. I want to make sure people understand my position. These people are asking for regulation, okay? I just the other day got an internet was sent by my staff at 10 o'clock in the morning on Friday. I got it yesterday. See, we want to talk about the consumer. Let's talk about you,
Mr.
and
Chairman.
Me.
Al,
yes, sir.
I'm sorry. I thought you were finished. I'm sorry.
No, I'm not finished. These people are massively invading this world of the internet. Why? Tubes. The internet is tubes. Providers. Consumers. Movies delivered to your house. Big truck. Small business is tubes. Tangled on tubes. 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 Series of tubes. Your own personal internet. The world wide web. The internet is tubes. Tubes. Tubes can be filled. And if they're filled, the internet is going to be delayed. A series of tubes. The internet is providers. The internet is consumers. The internet is you and me. The internet is not a big truck. The people who are streaming through a whole book at a time. Tubes. Maybe there is a place for the internet. And again, the internet is a series of tubes.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter at Webcomic Beacon. Email us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail by calling 1-320-310-0922. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic news, tropes, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back. It's been your moments for us. Years have passed. We're ready to keep talking about everything that happened years ago back on October 9th, 2011. Now, a couple things quickly of note. PhD the comic, which can be found at phdcomics.com, has released a movie version of itself that was funded by George Cham and other people and put on by the Caltech theater and film department, which I thought was very interesting just because of all the places where I go for theater and film. It's
the Caltech. PhD players.
Yeah, the PhD players. I mean, I guess they're very well familiar with grad students, if nothing else, it being a grad student comedy. Anyway, it is the movie is currently on tour, interestingly enough, through colleges throughout the U.S. We found this news via Daily Cartoonist, and you can read all about it. Follow the links from our newscast. And with that, we'll move on to other stories. Which brings us to a little more of the business section. Barnes & Noble has officially declared that they don't want to sell a book that they can't also sell digitally in order to make more options available. They're going to make less options available. So if they aren't allowed to sell the digital version of something, or there is not in the case of there is no digital version, but just in the case where there could be a digital version and they don't have access to it, they have said no and will not carry it. This issue has come up specifically with some recent comic releases, including DC graphic novels that are now available on the Amazon Kindle Fire. The new one that's in color and all that fanciness, and therefore not in Barnes & Noble digital, and therefore it's pulled physically off of the Barnes & Noble stores. This just seems like the dumbest thing ever.
Right. Well,
in your fridge, DC.
I don't think they're doing them yet because the Kindle Fire isn't out yet. Not for another like 30 days or so. Maybe a little more. But yeah, that is very odd. You know, I think they're trying to you know throw their weight around, and they might end up finding out that they don't have enough weight to throw around.
I don't think Barnes & Noble has nearly as much weight as they think they do, especially in comparison to Amazon.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, pretty much have Amazon to thank for the postal service not going completely under yet. and Barnes & Noble's gonna take that on? I mean, I just don't see it. But they say on the article, which can be found at Comic Book Resources, Regardless of the publisher, we will not stock physical books in our stores if we are not offered the available digital format. To sell and promote the physical in our store showrooms and not have the ebook available for sale would undermine our promise to Barnes & Noble customers to make available any book anywhere, anytime. Now, here's the thing that I don't get about this, and this is just me being completely annoyed. Like, okay, I'm in the store. I'm shopping physically for things. Do I care what's digitally available in that moment? No. When I'm at home and I want to buy something while I'm on my e-reader or I'm on the go and I'm on my e-reader, fine. But when I'm in that store, do I care that the digital version of something isn't available? It's like, no, I'm staring at the book right now. Why do I care? Oh, God. Idiots. This just reminds me of the woman at Archie Comics is just like, ugh, my balls hurt.
Yeah, you know, the sad fact is these comics are probably not huge sellers for them in the first place.
Very true.
And the exclusive with Amazon is only about 4 months. So I think it's more of a posturing, a statement.
Yeah.
Than anything long term. But you know, we'll see how that goes for them. Last time I checked, The Milk isn't, you know, that huge of a hit.
Exactly.
It's doing well, sure, but they're still a distant number two in the e-reader market, I think.
So. Yeah, and you know, we talk a lot, the media in general talks a lot about, I just said that we're the media, yes. Media talks a lot about whatever's number one in the industry, and it is important to note that you can be number two or three in an industry and still stay well alive.
Oh, sure, yeah.
This is the number one bestseller and this is the number one bestseller, but like, you know, that does not mean that if you're number two, you aren't selling hundreds of thousands of a thing.
Well, not comics.
Thousands, right.
Selling hundreds of thousands of a comic is next to unheard of.
Right.
So,
anyway.
As the chat room points out, they're only pulling the books from stores. They're still going to have them on hand to sell online BN.com is sort of a different division of Barnes & Noble than their bookstores. It's sort of run by different people.
Gotcha.
So thanks. It doesn't always cross over.
Thanks, chat room. This is why we love the chat room.
That explains why BarnesandNoble.com carried my book, and it was like pulling teeth to get the stores to carry it.
Yes, exactly. I used to work at Barnes & Noble, so that's how I know things like that.
You know all about it. All right.
I could totally run Barnes & Noble, guys.
Also mentioned here in the business section, Miramax and Netflix's CEOs were recently at a conference where they said that piracy really wasn't a big deal and did not affect prices that much, which is always interesting for them to admit out loud to other people. But meanwhile, digital distribution is a big issue, and they're very worried about monopolies of digital distribution. The Miramax CEO said, another problem related, Apple is the strongest company in the music industry because there was not enough competition, and still this day there's not enough competition. As an industry, it can't then influence packaging, merchandising, all the things that are vital. As an industry, the movie industry, we have to be very cognizant of that. That is why we did our deal with Netflix and why we also did our deal with Hulu. We want multiple players to be successful, which can wind up affecting digital distribution for comics and things later on.
The interesting thing to note about that is that, by citing Apple as one of the reasons why the music industry is supposedly fucked right now, Miramax is owned by Disney. Steve Jobs, until he died, and still, I guess, is the single largest shareholder at Disney.
Right.
So that was an interesting point. But, you know, at this point, Miramax isn't really a major player in the industry anymore. They're still making, you know, Oscar-bait movies, and they have a great library of movies. But
reminds me near daily.
Yeah. But it's interesting. That's a really strange comment to make, I think.
Very true.
But, I mean, yeah, obviously a distribution monopoly is lamentable, but, you know, all of the Hollywood studios also have a distribution arm, not just for theatrical distribution, but also, you know, they publish their own movies as well. They could just as easily, you know, create their own digital distribution company and handle it themselves. In fact, most of the Hollywood studios are aligned in some fashion with one of the music studios. They've tried and failed to, you know, replace iTunes. I know Sony has. They have their own little thing, their little wannabe store that nobody goes to.
Their own little thing.
They pat them on the head. Yeah. You're like, oh, you're trying to sell digital music too.
That's adorable.
Yeah.
Look at you.
Yeah, it's... I understand that, you know, it's something they're concerned about, but they're the ones to blame for letting it happen.
Yep. That's what happens if you don't innovate. Someone else comes and does it for you. Speaking of innovation, my God, webcomics, artists, independent guys, step aside because a new frontrunner has entered onto the scene, stepping in over at DoritosandMax.com. Is a Dorito and Pepsi Max themed comic, web comic, I should say, digital comic, featuring two new superhero characters, Fire Fingers and Ice Fist, who get their powers from the radioactive planet of Kablamo exploding, and now they're fighting crime. Yeah, and all of this can be found over at that website I just said. Now, here's the thing. This is not created by just one artist, but actually an entire marketing team. The digital agency based in London called The Mill actually is the team behind it. I got to say, it's interesting to see that Pepsi and Doritos are actually trying this out at all. Also interesting is the fact that they put an agency in charge of it instead of, you know, maybe a comic artist or something. There are comic artists behind it. Right. But
I really want to do a dramatic reading of this one part of the article. Can I?
Okay.
The webcomic is an attempt at pushing a fairly unexplored genre, online comics, into a new and exciting space by using mainstream comic book production techniques and talent coupled with interactive storytelling. Guys, no one in the last 15 years has ever thought of that before. Ever.
Whoa, we could put comics on the internet. Not only can we put them on the internet, we can put the entire first episode in Flash and then stick that in a frame.
Yeah, it's really a motion comic. Not a real comic. Motion comics are poorly animated movies. That's what they are. They're not comics. Sorry. But this is really just kind of the 2010 update of the Kool-Aid Man comics that you would send out for.
I was thinking the Hostess comics where Spider It's like, Dr. Doom just stole my Hostess cupcake. Sure.
Those were just ads, though. And this is not an ad. It's a whole, you know, it's a story.
It's more like the Adventures of Bazooka Joe. In
You know what? This is actually, it is a fairly unexplored genre for marketing.
Right.
You know, I was just thinking about, you mentioned the Kool-Aid comics, and it's like even like the little one-page comics for Hostess Fruit Pies. You know, it's like, yes, they should be doing this. They should be making freaking comics that are just, hey, buy our stuff. Tostitos and Salsa or something like that did like that nolaugh.com thing where they did a bunch of videos.
They actually use the phrase, my hand's doing stuff too. It looks like it hurts, but it doesn't.
Truly, we found the next Shakespeare.
Oh, this is amazing writing.
I will buy. I will go buy some Doritos and Pepsi Max just because of this comic. Now,
I would like to point
out that's what they want, Fess. That's what they want.
Clearly, we here are not the key demographic. Obviously, no.
It's for kids. Come on,
it's for kids. And here's the other thing: if stuff like this was more popular, more people would generally be reading comics, and they would have to hire people to create said comics, which would mean more money in the comic industry. I mean, would you like some Doritos and Pepsi money coming your way? I mean, I know it might not be the most exciting work you do, but I've done way dumber work for money. You won't get into what?
leave your day job as a hooker out of it.
Exactly.
And you know, I just got to say, you know, for those that are interested in advertising through, you know, webcomic avenues or, say, podcasts, I mean, you can go to webcastbeacon.com/advertise and check out the advertising options for our many wonderful programs here at the Webcast Beacon Network.
Nice. That was smooth.
That was a great segue. Yeah. If there are any Hollywood studios listening, I do a movie comic. Hey.
I'm waiting for that inkling to wake on.
Yeah.
That test copy of the inkling.
Yeah, God, when's that happening? Can we get some of that action? All right. And with that, we'll gladly move on from Doritos and Max. God, it's just hilarious. I think and the guy's name's Max. It's great. Anyway, of course. Marvel has now started releasing the digital version of Avenging Spider-Man number 1, or will be releasing it for free when you buy the print version. The digital download will be available through Marvel's app and also in the Google Chrome store in November when the comic ships. So nice to see that, you know, another take on digital as opposed to having to pay for it separately or extra. Yeah, that's about all I have to say about that. Now, Gordon, when you did your book, did you release a digital copy along with it?
I did not. I have 5 chapter ebooks that are separately released because the books are they were roughly 36 pages at the time. Now I've broken them up by each strip being on its own page, so the length actually varies, but. I have them separate because the file size would just start getting ridiculous with vector artwork. You don't want an ebook that's larger than like 30 megabytes or 35 megabytes, I think in some cases. Also there's some licensing issues. I have the prequel story in the print book that has, a film still from, Star Wars Revenge of the Sith, and my licensing agreement with Lucasfilm about the use of that image only extends to the print version. So I would have had to pay a little extra to do it as an ebook, and I just figured I would.
Well, good on you for even like figuring all
that. Yeah, that's very interesting that you actually licensed your stuff.
Just the one still. As opposed to just doing it. You know, the other.
As opposed to claiming fair use, right. Sort of things.
And there probably was a somewhat of a fair use argument, but the context that I was using it in, I didn't feel like I was commenting on the movie enough or parodying the movie enough to really support the fair use argument. And also, even if I had had the Blu-ray version, which wasn't out yet, the resolution of the image of the screen grab would not have been good enough to print. It would have looked terrible. So by licensing it, I had them give me a high-res version, and so it actually printed well and looked good in the book. So that, I mean, it was a little of both, but, you know, I also just didn't want Lucasfilm's lawyers coming after me.
Understandable.
Yeah. So I figured I would get permission to use the theatrical poster. That one didn't involve a licensing fee. But you know, the film still, just wanted to make right by George.
Nice. So. All right. And, with that, we enter our education section, because we want to teach you here at the Webcomic Beacon. So A few quick articles that you can find over at our news post. First one is a discussion thread over at Slashdot that where people are looking for the best manual on user interface and web usability, also mobile usability. Tearing into a whole discussion where everyone pretty much said, read, don't make me think, and then some other things are good too. I completely agree with, because I make all my students read Don't Make Me Think the first time they ever touch web design or interactive design. But there's also a lot of other books discussed. And if you are looking to redesign your webcomic site, it behooves you to go on and actually read what you're trying to do in the slightest. So go read Don't Make Me Think and all the other ones that they mention if you are trying to do that anytime soon. Also mentioned is some DeviantArt tutorials, including an interesting one on fashion poses and I think a really interesting one on hair coloring. And I'm not even going to mention the one on nipples.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yeah, we'll just skip that one entirely. Okay. Also, I don't have a DeviantArt like account, so I couldn't even get to it because it's behind like a...
It's marked. Yeah, it must be marked.
Yeah, it's marked sure. Like mature since there's boobs in it. And now I think I've just enticed people into it more than I ever meant to. Anyway.
It's not a very instructive tutorial, people. It's not.
All right.
Walk away.
This is from our boobs expert here, guys. So
it's true. I'm looking right at him.
Okay. Which brings us into the net neutrality debate. So are those of us here on the show familiar with what net neutrality is and
is
why every
webcomic
person should give a crap?
Sorry.
Yeah, what's that?
Yes.
I was just saying that's not what nipples look like. Holy, what the fuck is that?
Yeah, those are like those are your crater nipples.
We're on net neutrality now.
I'm done.
Sorry, my Skype cut out a little bit.
Oh, no, it's fine. It's fine. It's just funny to juxtapose net neutrality with nipples. Anyway, net neutrality is a really serious issue. If you don't know what it's about, it's basically the idea that every website accessed on the internet, no matter which ISP you have, should load at the same speed that is not throttled by your ISP. So the analogy that's often made is the idea of cable. When you have cable, if cable TV was the internet, then instead of all channels just automatically coming in and you can go to any channel you want, the idea that you might have to pay more to access more channels at all, or that you would have to pay more in order to get those channels to come in as fast as other more premium channels. So obviously that would mean that would just weigh the internet to people who are paying ISPs to do that, or however that is that might work. So legislation has been in the works about this for a long time. Obviously it's a global issue, not just a US-based issue, but it could seriously affect how any of us have websites or and are able to get our websites to an audience. So yes, this is important. Meanwhile, in this particular article over on GigaOM, there's a recent study about the kind of statistics that have often been cited in terms of network access and bandwidth and approaching it from the ISP's perspective. Now, at this point, I want to open it up to you guys, since hopefully you've had a chance to kind of peruse this. And your thoughts on really the net neutrality issue.
it's kind of complicated, I think.
Yes, clearly.
Yeah. Obviously, it would be terrible if basically only large companies could have websites that ran for shit. But, you kind of have that to some extent already in terms of, like, CPU usage. And, obviously bigger websites have to spend more money to have their website run at all. In large part, that's because of the traffic as opposed to before anybody even shows up. So that is, I guess, the main distinction. It I don't know. It's weird because I don't understand how, breaking net neutrality makes any sense at all. It completely undermines the point of the web in the first place, which is to have freely available information.
Right.
But I don't think capitalism has really cared about that very much.
That's true. And I think the issue deals less with sites that have, static images like a lot of webcomic sites, and more with sites like Netflix, because Netflix has been, and other streaming sites, because that is a lot of bandwidth. And right now, except in extreme cases of people, torrenting all the time, mm-hmm. bandwidth isn't really considered in the price of internet anymore. You just kind of have internet and bandwidth is what it is. And Netflix is just something that they didn't really consider when bandwidth really, was kind of given out that way and priced out that way. And Netflix, the reason I bring up Netflix as an example is because between prime time, Netflix uses something like 30% of all U.S. And that's not even counting other video streaming sites.
Yeah.
So, there's a lot of bandwidth devoted to video right now that was not really considered when pricing schemes really were.
But they're paying for it, though. I mean, they work with Akamai or whatever other content distribution networks there are, and they're certainly paying through the nose for that bandwidth.
Paying for it on their end, but meanwhile, sure. On the consumer end, should the consumers be paying at all to be accessing all of that coming through their end of things?
Well, absolutely not.
Well, yeah, we're going to say that we're consumers. We don't want to pay more. Of course we don't.
I mean,
already paying $8 a month plus how much it costs to have high-speed internet. Yeah. We're already paying.
Now, what this article is saying, in particular about this issue, because we're kind of talking about the issue as a whole here, is that in this paper entitled "The Open Internet, a Platform for Growth," that a lot of the arguments made by telecom companies about why they should be charging more and why they should break net neutrality are actually complete bullshit. So that's supporting us, the consumer, which is always nice to hear. And they go into more details from there. Now, with that, I think the idea is something that if you are listening to this, you should care about because you're on the internet right now or you used it to get this podcast. So you should feel like this affects you. And along with that, go look up net neutrality, investigate it, look into what's going on with it, care, and maybe even get involved. There's a lot of sites that are working on it, specifically SaveTheInternet.com, which is doing a lot with net neutrality and other sites like it. But look into it and learn what you're talking about and go from there. And we'll move on to the next article, which we will skip that one on Web Originals because I just think it's dumb. 24-hour comic day was recently, and did either of you guys participate at all in 24-hour comic day?
I was at Webcomics Con that whole weekend.
That's nice.
I was at a wedding.
Yeah, I was at a wedding too. Or dead, depending on who you ask. And I didn't have a chance to really do much with it. I wish there was like a makeup day, like an official, that was today. Ooh.
some places do that. For a while, Mid Ohio Con here in Columbus was on 24-hour comics day for a couple years. And so the Columbus comics group that I belong to, called Sunday Comics with an X, did a makeup 24-hour comic day a couple weeks afterward.
Cool.
Yeah.
Have either of you ever done 24-hour comics day?
No. I actually have no interest in ever doing it because right. I can't draw by hand for 4 hours straight and have my work look anything remotely good. So I know that's not the point. But
this is why you and I get along, because we're illustrator buddies.
Yeah. Well, I do feel like I'm a pretty decent traditional artist as well.
Me too.
but yeah, like my hand will start to cramp up after right, 2 pages tops. Yep. so
in fact, Alex's Guide started as a 24-hour comic.
Oh, really?
Wasn't he? For my last quarter of college, I did an independent study where I wanted to complete a 24-hour comic. I ended up doing 4 of them over 10 weeks.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. And Alex's Guide was one of those, and it was the one I liked best, so that's why I started up as a webcomic last year.
Very cool.
After doing 4 of them so close together, and I've also done other attempts since then, too, I kind of get really bored of doing 24-hour comics, so I may be done with them.
I did
so many.
What's that, Fess?
I did a 24-hour comic, I think in 2007 or 2008, and it was on 24-hour comics day, because you don't have to you're not limited to just 24-hour comics today to do a 24-hour comic. You're not. You can do it whenever you want. But this one year, I was like, I'm going to do a Lego webcomic. That was an endeavor, because I was doing it. I know I wanted to do a Jenny Everywhere Lego comic, and I thought, okay, I'll do this. I got all my Legos all pre-sorted into colors and types and shapes. There's a couple of videos on YouTube where I'm showing like all the Legos I have. It's like, oh, what I'm going to do? And it's like, we get down there and it's like, I really should have had a table, because I'm like just hunched over on the floor building this little town, and it's like, oh, my back hurts and all this sort of thing. And then I'm like taking all these pictures in my mind, thinking about what the hell the stories is going to be. So I have like 300 pictures, and I'm realizing this, okay, I overestimated how much I need to make a story here. I got 24. I did get 24 pages plus a cover done within 24 hours. I think by 16 minutes left. But then I had to update it over the next like a couple months to finish it with 56 pages. So, because I just wasn't done yet.
Yeah, when you do a 24-hour comic, or even multiple 24-hour comics, you figure out very quickly what parts of your workstation are not ergonomic enough.
Yeah, I did a 24-hour comic. A couple of us here in D.C. got together. There was a group the group of people are all still friends, but we don't do it officially as the official name of the group anymore. Mm-hmm. Called Washington Webtoonists, which actually a fair amount of them are now Super Art Fight involved people. We all got together and did a 24-hour comic day. And actually, out of that day...
Sorry.
Whoa, when something exploded. And out of that day, things exploded. Earthworld actually came out of that, if you've ever read Earthworld.
Neat.
A lot of the writing for that got done, which is why I'm featured in one of couple of the early pages, is because he was just like, who should I put in? And then I was sitting there and so I got to do it. And I did one that never saw the light of day. I drew it all, but I didn't finish inking it in time. And I also slept a few hours in there because I was exhausted.
The last couple times I've done it, I've just used it as an excuse to like get a buffer for whatever comic I'm working on at the time.
What I really want to do, I've actually done this with some non-comics friends, is just do what I call like productivity nights, where it's like, I want to see people, but I have a lot of stuff to do. So why don't we all just get in the same place and then work on whatever shit we need to work on?
Yeah.
So actually like for a while, like one or two nights a week, I would just be like, I'm working on stuff, but if anyone just wants to have a movie on and hang out while that's happening, come on over. And
my friends call that sweatshop night because they sew.
Nice. I think the idea of 24-hour comics day is just the thing I like best about it is getting together with other people that are working on the same stuff and all being working. And that idea of bringing a social element, something that is normally so solitary, is awesome. In fact, sometimes me and some of the other Art Fight guys will after our weekly Art Fight business meeting type call, we will sit on Skype and just be all working on stuff. I'll be shipping shirts or something. Someone else and Jamie will be drawing, and Darren will be complaining, and you know, yeah. All right. Well, we would love to hear your 24-hour Comics Day memories, or really your thoughts on any of the stuff that we've talked about this week. You can get in touch with us a bunch of different ways. There is, of course, our email address, webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. We have a phone number that you can drunk call at any time, which is 1-320-310-0922. Put it in your phone and have it on standby for the next time.
I totally should have drunk dialed you guys last weekend.
Oh, man. I would love some Webcomic Beacon drunk dialings. Please.
I do have some information that we could probably put in here, which can be of use. The Webcomic Beacon podcast will be having its fourth anniversary, entering its fifth year, December 4th. I've gotten a few...
On my birthday.
Yeah, hey, I've gotten a few books which from web cartoonists that have sent in their print materials for me to review, and those are going to be given away. I haven't decided how exactly to do it, but I do know that you can get entries in by making Becky art for the Webcomic Beacon podcast, or actually any of the podcasts, if you would like to. If you make them relative for a particular show, like the Tropecast or the Newscast, you're free to do that as an entry. As entries, if you want to do more, you can call in and leave something that we'd probably use on the show for any of the podcasts at the Webcast Beacon Network. Those will also count as entries. And I'm thinking of some other things, but those are two things that people can start doing now all the way up to when we do the show in December. So stay tuned for that.
Awesome. All right. Well, with that, we have come to the end of yet another stunning episode of the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. We hope you've enjoyed the show. I've been your host, Ross Scott. I would like to take another quick moment to thank everyone that was on the show today. Thanks to Alex. At Alex, go read her comic, which, again, started as a wonderful 24-hour comic, over at alexsguide.net. And, of course, thanks to Gordon for being on the show. You can find his stuff at multiplexcomic.com. Gordon, you are welcome back anytime here on the show.
Thanks. Thanks very much.
If you dare wake up this early again. Now, if any of you want to join us live, you can find all of that info over at our website, newscast.webcomicbeacon.com. We record on Ustream on Sunday mornings at 10:30 a.m., and you get to hear us cursing and complaining behind the scenes. It's a good time. Speaking of which, thanks to everyone who joined us in the chat room. Thanks to Kendra Kirai and Yusaku777, and, of course, our own Eric, whose stuff can be found at bladebunny.com. And his old comic, Exern, is EXIERN.com. And with that, I think I've given out enough web addresses, so we will see you all next week and around the corner. Check out all the other stuff on the Webcast Beacon Network, and we will see you next time. Peanut butter and jelly, everybody. Have a great week.
Keyboard ever. What is that, from like 1985?
Trying to be quiet.
Actually, I would really like one of the old school clacky keyboards, because those sound so cool. If I can
really sounds like you're doing something on
it. It does. It sounds like work is being done.
It makes us sound more productive.
Yeah.